Historically, the Cleveland Browns are not the worst team in the National Football League. The Lions are a little worse. But the Browns last won a championship in 1964, and they have disappointed their fans by drafting badly, by fumbling when fumbling could do maximum damage, and by leaving town. In his new book, Cleveland Plain Dealer sports columnist Terry Pluto treats following the Browns as an opportunity for growth of a sort. The book is Things I've Learned from Watching the Browns, and Terry Pluto joins me now from WKSU in Akron, Ohio. Terry, welcome back to Only a Game.
Hello, Mr. Littlefield.
You're actually sort of a co-author for this book. Right on the front, it says it was written by you and, quote, hundreds of Browns fans. How did this writing partnership come about?
Well, I wanted to do kind of an informal history of the Browns, but I didn't want to do the usual way where you go talk to, you know, former players and coaches, which I did. I interviewed Bernie Carlozar and Brian Sipe and Sam Artigliano and Paul Warfield. But what I also wanted to do is get a perspective of the fans on the franchise and what the Browns mean to them. And frankly, why do you keep following this horrible franchise and what it's done to people for the last 40 years? And I just put it in the Plain Dealer once that I was writing this book with a couple of ideas and send me emails. And I expected maybe 250, 300. I got over 1,000 just once, and I suddenly realized these people want it, and they go, I want to be in this book. I want to tell the story. It makes no sense that I follow this team, but I do, and here's why.
A lot of writers have waxed poetic about what it was like the first time they walked into a Major League Baseball park and they saw the impossibly green grass and the impossibly white home uniforms. But writing about the Browns' home games, you give us this, quote, ah, the memories of drunks throwing bottles where parts of the stadium smelled like an animal died years ago, but no one can find the carcass. Why does anybody go back?
And they revel in that. Furthermore, while the baseball fan talks about the sun-splashed fields and all that, in Cleveland they talk about the wind off the lake and your nose running till it freezes and you're just shaking in your boots. And just when you think the Browns are going to win, they call Red Right 88 and Brian Sipe throws an interception in the end zone, throwing to the wrong receiver at the wrong time. And then you walk out of the ballpark saying, I guess I'm still a Browns fan, but don't ask me why right now.
There are several heroic figures in this book, Terry, players who fought and lost and rose to fight again. But is it fair to say that former Browns quarterback Bernie Kosar dwarfs them all?
Oh, yes. I could have done an entire book of Bernie emails. Bernie grew up in Youngstown, Ohio, went to University of Miami in Florida, which actually, it was interesting. I always wanted to know why he went there. It turned out he wanted to go to Ohio State, wanted to go to Penn State, wanted to go to Notre Dame, and none of them wanted him.
Mm-hmm.
So he went down to Miami in Florida, won a national title, was a really good player, got his degree in finance in 3 years, and then entered the draft early and kind of finagled, let everybody know he wanted to play for Cleveland. They pulled a trade, brought him up here. He ended up being a good player, and more people in their emails use this phrase for Bernie, he chose us. And let's face it, after all the things you just saw with LeBron James, whatever, it was somebody chose Cleveland to live and, you know, play in the snow and all that stuff. It meant so much. And of course, Bernie, if you watched him play, was kind of like a giraffe trying to throw a watermelon. It was not pretty, but he would get this. He would probably explain that himself. In fact, he made fun of how unathletic he was.
Mm-hmm.
But he was, you know, a remarkably accurate passer in his own weird way, a sidearm with all kinds of arms and legs going in different directions. Very, very tough guy. And, of course, in true Browns fashion, Bill Belichick came in here. That was before Bill Belichick won a whole bunch of Super Bowls and became an icon. Here he just looked like a young, egotistical coach who couldn't wait to cut Bernie Kosar in the middle of the 1993 season. Bernie went on to be a backup in Dallas. And actually, he's lived between here and Miami since. But anywhere he goes, I mean, he has signed more autographs. I mean, he and Bob Feller are like the two icons of Cleveland sports.
Is he aware of how important he still is to lots and lots of Browns fans?
I really think he is, and especially the last couple of years where he's been getting some treatment for these different for his concussions and other problems. It's helped him appreciate, because he went through a really ugly divorce, a bankruptcy, and Cleveland did not abandon its native son at all. If anything, people, the business community rallied around him to help him. And if you, when you watch him with people, he always says it's easier to be nice for 30 to 45 seconds to someone, pose for the picture, sign the autograph, hug the baby, than it is to act like a jerk and then you, suddenly you're in the middle of this horrible stare down and standoff. And also, it's just nice with him. He comes from a steelworking area, and he kind of, even though he got that degree in 3 years, he just sounds like he sort of walked out of the mill, and he doesn't seem to act like he's all that special, but he gets it, the fact that he is special to a lot of people.
At least one of your correspondents referred to Art Modell's moving the Browns out of Cleveland in 1995 as, quote, the dagger wound to the heart that has still not healed. Regarding your book's title, what did Cleveland fans learn from that episode?
It learned how the NFL is a bigger, crueler, more heartless business than they ever expected. Because even when Art Modell was complaining about the lack of a new stadium and all these problems, the Browns were still anywhere from 5th to 8th in attendance in the league. How about this, Bill? The day the move was announced, in the next 24 hours, they sold over 600 tickets. I don't know why, to watch the remaining games. I don't know why anybody would spend a dime. And the remaining games that year, I believe there were four, they averaged in the high 50,000s. And those are real people in the seats. I was covering these games going, why is anyone here? You've got the ultimate betrayal. But see, to them, it was like a last pilgrimage. They went to the seats that their grandfathers – I mean, these seats are passed down from generation to generation. At least they were at the old stadium. Of course, Bill, the thing was that the last home game, people came to the game like with their Black & Decker power tools and tool belts, and they began ripping the chairs out that they had because the game's over. Now you hear all this pounding of things. You think it was like, you know, a carpenter's union meeting, and they were practicing, and they hauled their seats out with them as they left.
Have you a favorite among all the emails you received from Browns fans?
There were two of them. One guy wrote, he said, you know, when the Browns are bad, they're just awful. And when they're good, they're excruciating. Because he meant how close they come to winning, but they don't. Another guy wrote, I don't blame Art Modell for the move, and I don't blame Ernest Biner for the fumble, and I don't blame Brian Sipe for Red Right 88, and I don't blame John Elway for the drive. I blame my ancestors who 200 years ago came from Ireland to this country and could have settled anywhere, and they picked Cleveland and stuck me with the Browns. In fact, I get an email from a guy, I love this. He was actually talking about, in a bar in Hawaii, about how John Elway wrecked them with the drive and all in these type of things. And then all of a sudden, he gets a drink sent over to him, said, I'm sorry I ruined your childhood, John Elway. And Elway was sitting in the other part of the bar and heard this story. And see, that's why I wanted the emails, Bill. You can't make this stuff up.
Terry Pluto is the author of Things I've Learned from Watching the Browns, or at least he's one of the authors. The book is published by Gray & Company, and Terry Pluto joined me from WKSU in Akron. Terry, thanks very much for speaking with me.
Thank you, Bill.
On the first day of Christmas, Art Modell gave to me every Tigliano Super Bowl team. On the second day of Christmas, Art Modell gave to me Don Cockcroft kicking on a Rattigliano Super Bowl team.
Only a Game is produced by Karen Given and Doug Trabu. Our technical director is John Perotti. Jack Flagler is our long-serving intern. Jack, best wishes beyond the toy department. We had help this week from Tim Rudell at WKSU in Akron, and our senior producer is Gary Wallach. To view my Boston Bladies photo gallery or Philip Gratzer's Gingerbread Trailer Park pictures, subscribe to the Only a Game podcast or listen to archived shows and stories, please visit our website, onlyagame.org. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Only a Game Radio. Our final word comes from Terry Pluto, who offers this thumbnail history of Cleveland's fabled dog pound.
So now they're barking, and the defensive guys are barking, and everybody's barking, so that became a place where everybody was barking when they weren't yelling or passed out.
Football, what's not to love? I'm Bill Littlefield. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.
Al Zadu attacking Brian Sipe, passing Don Cockcroft, kicking on a Rattigliano Super Bowl team. On the fifth day of Christmas, Art Modell gave to me both the Bruins moves. Al Zadu attacking Brian Sipe.
Cypher passing Don Cockcroft kicking on a Ritigliano Super Bowl team.
Support comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, supporting unconventional approaches to transform health and healthcare at rwjf.org/pioneer. And the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at gatesfoundation.org. This is NPR.